Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the Mission Impossible franchise, 1 minute at a time. I'm Chris.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Rob.
Yo soy Duff.
Hola, Duff.
Hola.
We're still in Spain.
That's true.
And we're here with the with two of the guys from a free podcast. That is the name of the podcast. Rob screwed up and didn't even tell anybody yesterday where to go or what the name of his podcast was. He said an old podcast that's already wrapped.
They should
but that's
know.
Okay.
They should know.
It's called a free podcast dot biz.
It's dot com. Come on, we paid the $10 a year.
Okay. Dot podcast. But this is Rob Lumley and Duff. Just like Cher. Duff.
Just like Cher.
I want to thank you guys. I actually want to thank your listeners. If you can just give me a minute here.
This is going to go so bad, Chris.
Yeah, last year, some people weren't fans of me on there, mostly Chris, really. And
sorry, I can't hear what you're saying. What?
And
it was this year, Ron.
And there was an outcry, really, of the Mid Impossible fans for me to be back on. And Chris, I have to admit, when you set the petition at 5,000 signatures for me to come back on, I thought that was too high. But the listeners really came through. And I appreciate that a lot. Also, just a quick FYI, this isn't really what change.org is supposed to be used for, but I still appreciate all of you signing that so I could be on.
I offered them all a free Mission Impossible Fallout poster.
So
that's nice.
Thank you to the IMF fans or the Mid Impossible fans, members of IMF, if you will, for signing that, and I could be back on here again for another Mid Impossible.
Good work building that bot.
Yep.
And thank you guys for giving Rob a Mission Impossible outlet so that he doesn't bring it up quite as often.
Yeah, we're that itch. We scratch that one itch that he's got. This minute is minute 17. Minute 17 begins with both Naya and Ethan standing in the tub, and ends with Naya being very miffed. She's very mad at Ethan.
Very miffed.
Yeah. The alarm has gone off. The big baddies are coming in, guns drawn.
What does Ethan grab here? Because the first couple seconds this minute are just boom, 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 and he grabs, it looks like a universal remote of some sort.
He is grabbing her compact.
Her compact laptop?
Nope, her compact for putting on, touching up makeup.
Oh, okay.
It has a secret densometer inside of it.
What's that? What is that?
We learned last week that I didn't know what it was until I read the script either. A densometer is used to find out different densities in things, and that's why last week it actually went like from low to high. So the density changed inside the tub, and that's where she knew there was a fake panel.
So is it kind of like a stud finder?
It is a stud finder, and look who she found.
Wow. This also kind of relates to Duff's tech of the app. She's just trying to see how hard something is.
Yep, you got to stick that compact in your waistband. It's the only way to take care of it. Or go out in the woods by yourself.
So do we know anything about this guy who shows up in the red? Like, he's the host, right? Like, is there anything more than that? He just is...
Señor De La Arena. That is his name.
De La Arena.
Almost like De L apostrophe Arena.
Okay.
Actually, I don't think that's the... What he's got in his hand is the card that she sticks into the wall.
And her lipstick, too.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a card because the compact's still sitting there on the bathtub.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, now I'm going to have to go look.
Oh, man.
Have you guys seen this movie?
Have you guys even watched this? It's literally one frame.
De La Arena, he is the Spanish Polly Walnuts from Sopranos.
He's
actually like the foremost flamenco dancer and choreographer.
Is that true?
Out there. Yes, it is. I was looking up his site.
I want a spinoff movie about this guy.
He's the world's leading flamenco dancer and choreographer.
He's the guy who taught Arya how to use a sword in Game of Thrones.
He's
not.
Okay.
He was in Strictly Ballroom. That's where I first saw him.
You know, I noticed watching this minute, I didn't notice yesterday, a lot of lit candles around that bathtub. There's a lot of fire hazards going on here that could have happened.
It's in Spain. All that stuff's made of tile. There's nothing. Yeah. That house isn't even flammable.
No.
Everything's made of marble and tile.
Yep.
True.
Have you ever been to Mexico?
Dude, I haven't been anywhere. I have been to Mexico.
You should get out of your hut and go to like an all-inclusive. Everything there is, it's lousy with marble.
That's just
and
for the
tile.
Vomit.
Rob, get out of your comfort zone. Go to the Dells.
The Dells is actually made of cornbread and wood. That's all the Dells is made out of.
So we find out that seems like Ethan Hunt and this other man, the Dell Arena, have met before.
Yep. This is where he comes in and says, "No, no, it's Señor Keys,
oh,
the security engineer." Señor Keys.
Yeah, is it Keys or Keith?
Keys. Because Keith's not a name.
Well,
of course it's Keys because he's like the security lock expert guy. So yeah. It's got to be that simple. Keys for locks. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, let's use that name.
There's a lot of questions about this because now we have to talk about stuff that doesn't even happen on screen about all these aliases he's got.
Yes.
And how long has he been the security expert for this guy knowing that this was going to happen? I mean, did he do it like months in advance or did they set it up? I mean, seriously.
This is always the thing with these movies is that there must be a lot of boring prep work that goes into just the tiniest minute that isn't even that interesting.
Well, we learn that later in like 4 and 5 when we meet Benji.
Yeah, and he's the one who does all that stuff.
There's whole teams that do this. It's not Ethan Hunt, other than him being Señor Keys. What, there probably was a shell corporation. They probably only met him twice.
Obviously, but this guy met him at some point because he knows him. So yeah. he probably did like the classic, you know, it's kind of like on like one of those like home repair shows on TLC or something where the host likes to pretend that they do all the work, but once the camera's off, they just pawn it off onto some guy.
Yeah.
So it's probably like that.
So, all right. So let's try to figure out timeline on here, because when this movie starts, we're in Sydney, correct?
Yes.
And then we go to Utah for the mountain climbing. Mm-hmm. And then we go to Seville. So now we're in Spain. Mm-hmm. How much time do you think passed from one location to another?
There's probably a lot of airplane transfers and layovers from Utah to Spain.
But, you know, they probably had somebody come in, like another agent come in, dressed like Tom Cruise with the mask and everything, to set it all up.
Okay.
That's my thought, yeah.
Oh.
Maybe it was Ambrose.
Yeah, it might have been Ambrose, you know.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that, you know, you can wear a mask of someone who's on your team. That's legal.
Exactly.
That is legal.
So they probably had some other agent come in dressed as Ethan Hunt to set it all up and make it look like I'll be back later. And then they informed Ethan on his plane trip, you know, with a little secret videotape that he watches. And then he got there and reintroduced himself, you know.
They're in Andalusia. I don't know if we ever talk about this much, but they're Andalusian. That's where they are.
It's an illusion?
In case you're wondering. Andalusia.
Oh, okay.
It's another place you have not been.
No, there's a lot of places I haven't been. I just hang out in the old birthplace of Ethan Hunt all the time, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yep, that's where he's from. Go right. Fighting war hogs, because he's from a fake college. I don't know what they would be called.
Can we talk about what we think this interaction with Ethan, Ethan as Mr. Keys, or whoever was as Mr. Keys, like, do we think it was months beforehand, or just like, as Chris said, like, was it like the day before he showed up and he was like, "Hey, I got a new security system for you."
I think they had it in place beforehand, like when Ethan was getting those glasses and everything. So yeah,
this is a party, so they could have easily had the minions like Benji and these other minions set up in a meeting and like our representative, Señor Keys, Mr. Keys, will show up tonight or yesterday. So Ethan's only been there a day. And he's like, and he goes and he meets him in the morning and looks at some stuff. He's like, "Oh, okay, this is where your stuff is." Remember, he also knew where the stuff was. So we had to know what the planning goes back further, because he has to know Naya's even going there. Yeah. How would they?
So that's what I'm saying, that they already had it set up before he even accepted the mission, because, you know, they already knew where they were going.
So how did he? I forgot how he knew Nadia would be there.
Sir Anthony Hopkins told him
briefing
probably.
From his glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
His Oakley.
Remember,
told
he had
him.
A briefing on the glasses. He probably got some sort of dossier on the plane, on the way there, and they, I guess they had leads on where she would be because she's in Seville or wherever this is, Andalusia. She was there to do something, and she's probably been casing the place. That's probably, they probably have her followed because in the glasses part earlier, we see like pictures of her candidly
and her aliases and stuff like that. Yeah.
So they're keeping up with her right now, the IMF. So they may have seen her casing this house and they're like, okay, we now know this guy's got this necklace here. Let's get a security person in there.
So speaking of that, Jonathan, is there a novelization of Mission Impossible 2?
No.
Oh,
we talked about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Could you
imagine?
There
a novelization of Miss Impossible, the first one?
Oh, yeah. Was there a novelization?
Yeah. And it was horny. Yeah, it was so horny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was basically the shooting script, and they had some guy come in and literally fluff it. He was a fluffer. Mm-hmm. They had him fluff
I
up
do
the
miss
story.
That about movies. Yeah. That I don't know when that died out, but there
2000.
You know, the novel is probably the
96 to 2000, literally from 2000, from because everyone could write fan fiction.
I do remember there was a novelization of X-Men, which came out later this summer. So I know that there was one of that. So
sometimes it's just a cash grab where they just take the shooting script and have someone literally add a few adjectives.
I mean, it's always elements. A cash grab, isn't it? For a novelization of a movie.
I actually read an article once about how there was this kind of debate amongst writers that it was a common, for people who weren't that rich to, they'd do that. And that some people thought it was beneath them. And some people are like, hey man, a job. And they would try to actually pepper it up and make it.
Oh really?
Because sometimes there are scenes that aren't in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Star Wars still gets the novelizations, everything that they make now like Solo just had a novelization come out like a couple weeks ago.
I'm trying to remember any novelizations I had. I know I had some.
I had the Howard the Duck one.
I feel like there was one for the Goonies that
yeah,
I
had. Oh yeah, there was. It had the octopus scene in it.
Yeah. The octopus scene was contentious. Sometimes they'd air it with and without.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then does Naya doesn't know that she's going to be Miss Hall though. That's sprung on her here by Ethan.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
She's been made a fool.
Yeah.
She's not a fan.
No.
She's lost her, and she's lost the bill. I mean, well, one, do you think she'd be able to get away from this? We'll talk about this later, but this seems like if she was by herself, she'd be in jail.
Yeah.
Well,
whatever it is.
We find out something later on that she would have just gotten away with it, though.
Spoiler.
Yeah. But, yeah, otherwise, she would be in trouble. Or, I mean, she's tiny enough. She could probably fit in that bathtub drain.
You think she's just like, see you later, coppers, and she jumps in the toilet with her hands up and just flushes herself down?
Are you
like
thinking
Finding Nemo?
Are you thinking of the secret world of Alex Mack? She can't just turn into a puddle and slide away.
She just turns into a Tinkerbell and just flies out the window. Okay, so I have another question here. Is this dialogue back and forth between her and Ethan, is this innuendo the whole time?
It's near a window.
Yeah.
There's a window right behind him. I don't know if it's in a window.
Yeah. She didn't.
You're going full dad jokes today, man. You're going full dad jokes today.
But I mean, like, they talk about how long it took for the alarm to go off, and she's like, oh, yeah, much, much too long. And then he talks about a lighter load. Maybe,
40 kilos.
Yeah, maybe they're imagining, what if the Metallica album Load was a little shorter?
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's
also
exactly what it is.
What kind of crap European movie is this? 40 kilos. How many pounds is that?
It's like 88 pounds or 86 pounds or something. So it's probably about what she weighs.
She weighs 88 pounds?
Dude, look at her. She's tiny.
That's not healthy, man.
Well, she's an actress.
I'm a judge a woman's body right now.
No, let's not do that right
now.
Eat a sandwich.
Eat some candy, Thandi.
She's twice as big as Claire was.
Yes, she is.
They're both very tiny women. Also, I think what's weird about this Ethan Hunt is Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible, actually in almost all the Mission Impossible movies, doesn't flirt really like this. Like, he's not like out to sexually conquest.
Right. Well, this movie, the chemistry, we talked about this before. Every week we talk about it. The chemistry between these two is insanely good.
What? Yeah. Oh,
it is. It
no,
is.
It's good.
No,
yeah.
No, it
Rob,
is not.
Rob, this is what it looks like when a girl is into you.
Come
I know it's weird
on.
To see.
No.
I think it's kind of weird because number one, I agree with the point that in the later movies, which are the ones I'm more familiar with, Ethan Hunt is so serious and devoted to his wife and there's no romantic shenanigans.
Which is nice.
Yeah, it's the anti-James Bond, and this feels very James Bond-ish.
Very
and
James Bond.
90s bad James Bond-ish.
Yeah.
Like the one with Denise Richards or whatever, that movie.
Christmas comes twice a year.
Yeah.
Comes early this year?
I'll go a step farther. I think this movie at times feels like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Like, it is so outrageous.
Rob.
It is so silly that, like, it just seems like this is, like, a scene from Ace Ventura. It just seems so out of the Mission Impossible universe. It's so silly. And, like, I'm being negative on this movie. I actually enjoy watching this movie because it's so stupid.
Chris really enjoys it.
I really enjoy
goofy.
It, yeah.
I think it's goofy. I think it's beyond goofy. I to the point of almost like, what were you thinking?
Like Ace Ventura.
Of the first half hour I watched for the first time in nearly 20 years and comparing it with the later ones, it feels like it has nothing in common. It feels like it's from an entirely different franchise.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, compared to the new ones, especially, because, I mean, the new ones are so.
But even if you watch 3 through 6,
even 1 and 2, even 1 and 2, it seems totally different.
Well, this is why this movie put so many people off, because they were ready for a, you know, procedural spy movie like the first movie, and then they're just like, what is happening?
This feels in one sense this is ahead of the time because this is a Fast and Furious movie before Fast and Furious.
I agree.
Yeah, there's certain like delicious over the topness of this movie that I do enjoy. Like I like the sequence before this with the dancers, and I you know, we make fun of this bathtub scene, but like I remember this bathtub scene. I remember him climbing on the rocks. I remember the motorcycle sequence at the end. Like, there are memorable sequences in this movie. I just feel like there's too many moments of it just feeling so silly. And like, this is a movie that to me is, as a Tom Cruise fan, is damning. Because, like, this is the, like, just Tom Cruise smiling. Like, that's all this movie is. It's just him grinning.
Based on his charisma. And it's, even the storyline, I mean, it's, there's barely a plot.
And you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, too, where we said that, you know, if this movie had been released as an Asian film in subtitles and stuff, we'd be like, oh, this is the best movie ever. But because it's in English with Tom Cruise and it's an American movie, we're like, no. But if it had been a John Woo movie with Chow Yun-Fat and all Asian cast, and we were watching it with subtitles, we'd be like, yeah, this movie kicks ass.
Basically, we give weirdness a pass when it's not from America. Yeah. We're like, they just don't do it the same way.
It's a different culture. Hey, you know, no big deal. But I mean, this isn't like over the top like an Indian film is. I mean, those things are like ridiculous compared to this, you know, but this is over the top like an Asian film. Yeah, I give it that.
I think part of it, actually a lot of it, and you know, Rob just said it, is that this is Tom Cruise smiling. And I think that this was literally the end. This was kind of the beginning of the end of the Tom Cruise dominance.
It was.
Because he had arguably the most successful decade for any actor ever.
And also he had just finished Eyes Wide
Shut. Yeah, so he really wanted something like light and fluffy compared to Eyes Wide Shut, which was like a 2-year shoot.
And Magnolia.
And Magnolia, yeah, exactly.
He had a high water year after a decade where it was something like, I don't know how many, but it was like 7 of his movies made $100 million. Which
I think every one of his movies from like 1988 all the way through 2000 made that much money, yeah.
And just media and movies in general, like, just everything was kind of over the top and not in a good way. It is
Over the top, such a good movie.
It is.
Yes.
But this, like I said, this feels like a music video, but it feels like not even a great music video. Like, it may be a fun music video, but it feels like a music video where you knew at the time, like, oh, this is not going to age well.
Yeah, and he produced the first one with Wagner, but this one was where he, I think where he starts to understand, and I think he learned his lesson after John Woo. I think he said, that's not really what we're going for. I think he figured it out by the third one when J.J. Abrams took over.
Yeah.
Because I think that's why there's, again, a long time in between two and three, because he had the power to be able to say, look, I can't be an action star forever, but I can be an action star in a movie where I control everything. I can be that. And that's how Vin Diesel has made his money. That's how all these actors are now moving into producer roles. And he was a producer early on, but the level that these two have created in these franchises, they kind of, in 2000 is when it probably was in its infancy at that point. Of how Hollywood was changing. DVDs weren't the sole way you were getting it. You were starting to have the soon the iPod's going to come out, so we're getting close to where
this is when DVD really had taken over the market, and so the home theater was becoming a big thing, and movie going wasn't as prominent as it was. After 2000, basically, it started to die off.
You basically knew you needed to make a better product after this movie. Now, not to say that there haven't been crap movies that come out in movie theaters, but if you can't do anything aftermarket, if you can't sell the DVD, you're not going to make a ton of money.
Yeah, even though this is like the biggest hit box office-wise of all the Mission Impossible.
Not anymore. Right? Now Fallout is. Fallout beat it a couple weeks back. Yeah.
But if you don't have that goodwill, then you can't get those. You know, it's all about licensing and ancillary. Yeah.
And you guys are right that a year later, almost exactly a year later from this, Fast and the Furious came out, the first one, and the audience shifted for what they wanted as far as action movies were concerned. You know, I think as a whole, after that movie, movies started to change. You know, with the Matrix and stuff like that as well. The appetite for action films became very different because, I mean, even John Woo's career started to wane in Hollywood after this movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, because I think it's interesting, but it's not deep. And if he needs to do one or the other, and it needs to be just insanely, the Fast and Furious movies are not deep at all.
No.
But they're so damn entertaining, you don't care. Or give me a deep movie. Like, give me something where you come out and you're like, that was a really fun, good movie, or that was a really poignant movie. You cannot, as moviegoers, we don't have the attention span anymore for this middle ground.
Yeah.
Well, and was the next movie Tom Cruise did after this, was the next one he did Vanilla Sky?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about contrast.
Yeah.
He did Vanilla Sky, and then Minority Report was after that.
That's such a good movie.
Yeah, that's a great
one. And that, again, also he's working with Steven Spielberg at that point. So every time, as he's moving forward, he's getting to these guys where, I mean, I think this now is maybe unpopular, but I think Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and Ron Howard are aging out of now what is now the current movie genre. Their movies don't resonate like they used to.
There definitely was. Also, I think this is kind of like, I feel like starting in like the late 80s, Tom Cruise started playing like got to collect them all when it came to like directors. Right, yeah. Because like you got Scorsese, you have Stone, you have Howard, Rob Reiner,
Barry Levinson, Sidney Pollack,
Neil Jordan was a big deal at the time. De Palma, Crowe, Kubrick, PTA. Then you get John Woo, who in like 2000 was like a huge get for this movie. Yeah.
And he's he's one of those Pokemon cards that are rare.
Because then he also did Collateral Pokemon with Michael Mann as well.
Yeah, and then Spielberg, and then he was sort of like, all right. I did it, but I guess even later on, you got Redford later on.
Yeah. You got Brad Bird later on in his own movies. He started collecting them in his own movies.
And then J.J. Abrams, Kenneth Branagh.
I got to get him. I got to get my
Brian Singer.
Bird. I got to get my Chris McQuarrie, which is a weird one, but God, it worked.
Even Edward Zwick was kind of a big deal at the time.
Yeah, he was. He was a big deal.
Did Ben Stiller direct Tropic Thunder?
Yes, he did. Ben Stiller. Yeah, he did.
And they were good friends.
And they'd known each other for years. Yeah. So, you know, that was one of those ones where, throw him a bone.
Yeah, because Ben Stiller had been making fun of him since even before this movie. Back with on Saturday Night Live when he did that Color and Money sketch with him.
And at that point also, when Tropic Thunder came out, he was coming off of probably not the best press with all of his divorces.
And the jumping the couch. So,
He needed to come back in with a win, and the win was be funny and make fun of yourself and wear a rubber suit.
Well, I mean, after Mission Impossible 3 and that whole jumping on the couch, they were like, we're done making these movies. You know, Paramount had wanted nothing to do with him after that. And that's why it took so long for the next one, you know?
Yeah, because he had to get new representation and pretty much be put back under control. He was I mean, look at the directors we were just talking about. We got Temple of Doom because two directors were mad at women.
Because they
were both going through divorces.
They both got divorced during the exact same time. Yeah. And so they made a movie that was darker than they probably intended and would not do now.
Yeah.
Same thing was happening. They didn't want Tom Cruise to create some bizarre Mission Impossible
movie. Which was going to happen. And that's the funny thing is that 3 was going to be this weird, very dark thing that David Fincher was going to do. And
3 or 4?
3.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, David Fincher was going to do 3, and it was just this big, dark human trafficking thing.
Oh, Fincher would have been bad.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No, I don't want my Mission Impossible
I want a Mission Impossible trafficking movie.
Yeah. I don't need my Taken and my Equalizer mixed in with my Mission Impossible.
Yeah, so, you know, it took a long time. Part of the reason 3 took forever was because it went through, like, multiple directors. I mean, it had, you know, Fincher and Carnahan, Kenneth Branagh. I mean, it just had a number of people at one point trying to direct it and make it, you know?
Let's go on to Tech of the Ep. We've talked a lot about where we think this movie's going, and we're going to get there in the next 3 scenes because we've got more change. We have 3 more distinct places we got to be. All right, we're deep in Tech of the Ep. Here we are. Chris, go for it.
I'm going to go with the tech that makes Tom Cruise the tallest person in the room.
That is an apple box, or a half apple.
Well, it's more than an apple box. It's like an apple row because walking, you know? They must have made the set to a certain point where he was the tallest person and everybody was shorter.
We've estimated that Thandie Newton is 5'5", and Tom Cruise is easily 4 inches to 5 inches taller than her in this scene. Yep. And I'm like,
she's 5'3", actually. She's 5'3". Yeah.
He's not 5'9".
No.
I refer to that as a Scully box from X-Files.
Yep.
Because I think there was a very... Actually, I know there's quite a height differential in David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. And so she always had... I think it was a shoe shine box. She had to go get her shine box.
It's a shine box.
That's great.
Yeah, she's 5'3", he's 5'7". So according to IMDb, he's 5'7", but I've heard he's 5'6".
Basically, what they did was they built the same kind of set floor they do for Muppets.
Yep.
When you have Muppets and adults,
it's like Yoda, you know, the Yoda set.
And you have to have them really low and the other people really high.
I choose to believe that he's 6'5", like in Jack Reacher.
Yep. Duff, what about you?
I'm going to go with What's-His-Face's jacket because got to stay warm. That's very
flamboyant. Oh, Señor de la Reina?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks cool as hell. He looks like... He looks like he's from the movie Casino.
He seems like an idiot. Also,
Rob, he just got divorced. Man, give him a break.
It's true. He also did. He was about to make some dark movie.
Divorced and he's selling her jewelry. It didn't end well. So
no. At least he got the money though. He's selling jewelry.
You don't. It's going on auction. You don't know what it's going
to
get.
Also,
get
maybe he's not a nice guy. It's not her jewelry. He gave it to her. Because he could just take it back.
Yeah, you can.
No, you cannot.
I don't know.
Squatter's rights.
I'm also going to agree with the red coat, though. It's like he grew up watching Thriller, and he's like, I'm wearing a red jacket forever.
Maybe he's a big fan of Casino, the movie.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
That jacket is sweet. Also, it's very... In my mind, Spanish, for lack of a better term. It's just like, yeah, that's what a Spanish guy wears.
Yeah.
When you're rich. Yep. And he also changed into it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful jacket. I'm going to go with the card reader that all the stuff that whatever Tom Cruise, whatever Ethan Hunt picks up. He picks up a card reader. He picks up a wafer-thin card reader, densometer, and a lipstick. So he's covering the tracks, and he hands it all to Thandie Newton behind his back. So it's awesome. It's super simple tech, but
gets the job done.
Get in the box, gets the job done. Speaking of getting the job done, I think we did for this episode. We waxed poetic about the state of movies in the year 2000. So let's come back tomorrow, and we're going to talk more about Mission Impossible 2 with Robin Duff. So until tomorrow, you can always reach us at Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible? No. That's not our name of our podcast. We're on Twitter at Min Impossible, M-I-N Impossible. We have a Facebook group at the Impossible Minute Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/minimumpossible.
I am a Patreon supporter.
He is. He
at is the a lowest Patreon level. Supporter. But hey, I'm a supporter.
Hey, you get a shout out. Rob, thanks a lot, man.
Hey, no problem, man.
I'd like to also shout out our other Patreons tonight. Two of them have been guests, and the other one is Daniel. And we love you, Daniel, and we love you, Tabitha and Jonathan. So as we get more and more, we're going to amass quite a list of names, kind of like Star Wars Minute does on their weekend edition, and have to say
yep. Kind of like that the change.org petition that everyone signed for me to be back.
It's funny, though, we had them – a lot of people paid for you not to come back on.
Yeah, I made a pretty penny on that, so.
Yeah. He bought himself a Bulgari watch or a Bulgari necklace for himself.
Yep.
He keeps it by the toilet. It's gross.
That's what I said. It's over by the toilet.
It's safe. He just takes the top off the toilet.
Yep, that's exactly where it is.
I'm going to pick the lock to your safe.
Basically, you got to flush it, open the top, and then when the water all goes down, then you can pull it out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's Goonies style. It's like more of a one-eyed Willy type
exactly.
Trap inside there. Okay.
Chris has to hope that no one double deckers his toilet and finds his
oh,
treasure.
Oh man, if someone AC Slater's your toilet, you're in trouble.
Oh no.
Well, until tomorrow. Woof. I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been Rob.
I was Duff.
This mission will self-destruct. What? Is it mission or podcast? Mission. This podcast will self-destruct.
Minute.
No, this minute. Okay, I can do the minute. This minute will self-destruct in 5 seconds. I forgot.